translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In his Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadeva has described that everything is but a transformation of the energy of the Lord. Shankaracharya, however, has misled the world by commenting that Vyasadeva was mistaken. Thus he has raised great opposition to theism throughout the entire world. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And this is quite a long purport, so I might take it in chunks. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, in the Vedanta Sutra of Srila Vyasadeva, it is definitely stated that all cosmic manifestations result from transformations of various energies of the Lord. Shankaracharya, however, not accepting the energy of the Lord, thinks that it is the Lord who is transformed. He has taken many clear statements from the Vedic literature and twisted them to try to prove that if the Lord or the Absolute Truth were transformed, His oneness would be disturbed. Thus he has accused Srila Vyasadeva of being mistaken. In developing his philosophy of monism, therefore, he has established Vivartavad, or the Mayavad theory of illusion. This is, of course, Lord Chaitanya speaking. In the Brahma Sutra, the second chapter, the first aphorism is as follows, that ananyatvam arambhana shabdadibhya. Commenting on this sutra in the Sharirika Bhasya, Shankaracharya has introduced the statement Vacharambhanam Vikaro Namadheyam from the Chandogya Upanishad to try to prove that acceptance of the transformation of the energy of the Supreme Lord is faulty. He has tried to defy this transformation of energy in a misguided way, which will be explained later. Since his conception of God is impersonal, he does not believe that the entire cosmic manifestation is a transformation of the energies of the Lord. For as soon as one accepts the various energies of the Absolute Truth, one must immediately accept the Absolute Truth to be personal, not impersonal. A person can create many things by the transformation of his energy. For example, a businessman transforms his energy by establishing many big factories or business organizations. Yet he remains a person, although his energy has been transformed into these many factories or business concerns. The Mayavadi philosophers do not understand this simple fact. Their tiny brains and poor fund of knowledge cannot afford them sufficient enlightenment to realize that when a man's energy is transformed, the man himself is not transformed but remains the same person. So this is about one quarter of the purport. This is a very key fundamental point in this discussion on Mayavad. And yesterday Maharaj also very much described from the previous verse exactly the different ways in which this Mayavad manifests and just how deadly it is for someone's devotional life. Of course, we've been advised by our acharyas that we should stay away from it. Because even if we hear a little bit of Mayavad philosophy, it could potentially, if we're not strong enough, divert us from having a very clear, fixed focus on devotional service. The Mayavad philosophy, of course, states that, well, it has many different variations. But in essence, it is the vad, the discussion on Maya, illusion. So various types of illusion could probably come into that category. But the most prominent type, and this is the type that Lord Chaitanya is defeating here, is this idea that both God and the living entity are one. And therefore, the entire world is one. And as Prabhupada explains, this arises because Shankaracharya has tried, for some reason, to actually state that it is not possible for the Lord to have separated energies. Because if the Lord had separated energies, there would be no contradiction between the living entities being in one category and the Lord being in another category. But based on his philosophy of oneness, he has to somehow accommodate the fact that there cannot be anything except the Lord. So therefore the way to deal with that is to almost arrogantly put everything on the platform of God. So whichever way you look at it, either you're reducing God to a very low level, or you're artificially increasing everything else, which is naturally at a lower level, to a higher level. So in that way, at least philosophically and in terms of commentary, one can make a presentation that everything is one. And his particular commentary is referred to as Sharirāka Bhāṣya. Now this particular commentary was written by Shankaracharya, and every genuine established sampradaya which claims to be operating in a bona fide way was required to have a commentary. Vedanta Sutra itself is composed by Śrīla Vyāsadeva, but it is written in a series of codes. Sutra means code, a very condensed, codified sentence construction. Most people, even if they're expert Sanskritists, they could read a code and they would have to really think exactly what is the full meaning of this. So the sutras, and they're sometimes called the Brahma Sutras, the Vedanta Sutras are designed to be, they need to be read in conjunction with a commentary, in conjunction with an explanation as to exactly what they mean. Now I'm sure you know the pastime, there was in the Gaudiya Sampradaya in Jaipur once a division of the Ramanuja sect, the Ramanandis, they raised an objection to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas performing deity worship in the Govindji and other temples within Jaipur. And they said, you're not from a bona fide sampradaya, because every bona fide sampradaya has to have its bona fide commentary, authorized commentary. So they tried to present many arguments, but they weren't accepting. So they sent word back to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was very aged. And at that time, because he was very old, he entrusted this task of setting things straight to Baladev Vidyabhushan, one of his students. So then Baladev Vidyabhushan, he came to Jaipur and presented in the assembly of the Vaishnavas that actually Bhagavatam itself is the natural authorized commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And as such, because Gaudiya Vaishnavas follow the Bhagavatam, they don't need an extra commentary. Now, this didn't go very far. They appreciated his scholarship and he defeated many of their arguments that they were posing. But still they insisted, no, we must have a commentary. So then he went back and in a very crestfallen way, he came before Govindji in the temple and expressed what had happened. And Govindji said to him, no problem, I'll dictate to you and you write. So then over the next few days, Sri Govindji dictated a commentary for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And it became known as Govinda Bhāṣya. And so Baladev Vidyabhushan was writing this and he took it and took it back to Jaipur. And when he presented this incredibly scholarly, superb work, immediately the Vaishnavas were happy. Immediately the Ramanandis were satisfied. And they accepted him as bona fide and they actually wanted to even take initiation from him, which is interesting. We see this phenomenon actually. Some opposition happens. It happens in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. And then eventually when someone establishes their superior status, their superior learning, their superior knowledge, immediately those who have been so-called defeated, as a method of demonstrating that, they request the learned person to give initiation. So the same thing happened here, but on this occasion he refused. And he said, actually, the Sri Sampradaya is known very much as a very prominent, very strict follower of bhakti to Krishna. And so if I were to give you initiation, it would be undermining that Sampradaya. So he didn't do it on that occasion. Their plan was to actually have the entire deity worship and the worship conducted in Jaipur to be transferred back to the Sri Sampradaya. So at least that was prevented. But he didn't want to diminish the importance of this sampradaya also. Because after all the four sampradayas are very much bona fide. They're established by the Supreme Lord. And unless one is actually a member of one of the sampradayas, it is said that one cannot understand mantras or any Vedic aphorisms if they have not been imparted through a bona fide practitioner within that sampradaya. Of course, the key here is bona fide. And within any sampradayas today, there will be many personalities who are definitely not practicing in the line that the initial acharyas established. So this aspect of having a commentary is key to understanding the Vedanta Sutra. And the Mayavadis use their commentary to approach it. But as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining, this commentary is flawed. It's flawed in the sense that the author's own opinions and own covering has somehow masked the potency of the real Vedanta Sutras. So we'll carry on reading. Prabhupada says, unfortunately, the Mayavad philosophy, misguiding people by claiming the living entity to be the Lord, has created havoc through the entire world and led almost everyone to godlessness. By thus covering the glories of the Supreme Lord, the Mayavadi philosophers have done the greatest disservice to human society. It is to counteract these most abominable activities of the Mayavadi philosophers that Lord Chaitanya has introduced the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Ranama, Hare Ranama, Hare Ranama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Gatir Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. People should simply engage in chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, for thus they will gradually come to understand that they are not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as they have been taught by the Mayavadi philosophers, but are eternal servants of the Lord. As soon as one engages himself in the transcendental service of the Lord, he becomes free. Mam cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatittaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So Mahaprabhu continues here with this, we are hearing the words related from Mahaprabhu by Prabhupada, that this Mayavad philosophy has actually confused the entire world. And the way it's done this is very interesting. In the Bhagavatam, in one place, Srila Prabhupada explains that the philosophy, the Mayavad philosophy, has given indirect impetus to mundane sex life. Now, we could read that and think, what's the connection here? But the point is that Mayavad philosophy negates the existence of anything spiritual. It negates a spiritual reality, or at the very best, it tries to equate our mundane reality to spiritual reality. Either way, the consequence is that we take what we have as the all in all. And in the absence of any superior notion or superior understanding of higher taste, of real spiritual rasa, real spiritual ecstasy, we actually assume whatever is in this world as the highest. Now, of course, even the most diehard Mayavadi will find it hard to deny that within this world there are certain things which are pleasurable and certain things which are painful. And of those, sex life is considered the most pleasurable. It's an experience of every single person in the world. So this is why, indirectly, material pleasures are given prominence, because out of desperation, being pleasure-seeking by nature, whatever philosophy one imposes upon one's consciousness, it cannot change the fact that one is pleasure-seeking by nature. That is inherent. It's an inherent aspect of the soul. So in order to somehow adjust these things, one becomes very casual. One becomes very disinterested in rules. Rules obviously include some kind of duality. What should be done, what should not be done. So on this philosophy of oneness, what you do, what you don't do doesn't matter. And therefore any activity becomes acceptable. As Maharaj mentioned yesterday, of course, this philosophy itself has many contradictions. And the very fact that you try to distinguish our current state from our eventual state, that itself indicates some kind of duality. Our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta is somewhat more refined. And as Lord Chaitanya has presented this concept of achintya bheda bheda tattva, that actually allows us to resolve many of the contradictions and complexities that other paths find. Yes, in one sense we are one. Vasudeva sarvam iti. So one who understands that, sa mahatma sudurlabha. But that's not to be taken in a completely all-encompassing sense. Yes, Vasudeva is everywhere. Krishna is everywhere. The super soul pervades everything. There is nothing in this world apart from Krishna. But that concept of Krishna also has very much associated with it aspects of spirituality, which are the jivas. spiritual sparks. Aparayam itasto anyam prakritim vidhi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. As well as the material elements, there is a superior energy. That superior energy comprises the living entities who are meant to exploit this material nature. So the material nature is different, the living entities are different, and there is another difference in that the Supreme Lord is yet another category. So we have three gradations. We have the Supreme Lord, Vishnu Tattva. We have the middle category, Jiva Tattva. And we have Maya, the material energy. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. Jiva Tattva is of the same caliber, if you like, as the superior energy. But because this energy is subject to being overridden by the material energy, that is why it is called the marginal potency of the Lord. So the Vaishnavas who understand that can very easily reconcile this world, the Supreme Lord, and the various activities that they do within this world. They don't need to make artificial adjustments to try to make everything combine. So this is how different varieties of sense gratification arise, because you have completely negated the real sense gratification. The real sense gratification is serving Krishna, feeling great satisfaction at serving the Supreme Lord, engaging our senses, our mind, our intelligence. If we don't do those things, then those very facilities that we have, the mind, the senses, the intelligence, as explained in the Gita, they become the sitting places of lust. The senses, the mind and the intelligence, they are the sitting places of lust. And from this point, it enacts and acts to trap us within this world. So these things are very much related. I heard once in some Prabhupada pastimes that disciples were asking Prabhupada, we've never met Mayavadis. We've never met anyone who claims to be God. And Prabhupada responded apparently to that by saying, you are all Mayavadis. So devotees were a little taken aback by this. Why is Prabhupada calling us a Mayavadi? Because in every other lecture we hear him constantly bashing the Mayavad philosophy. But then they came to understand that actually, yes, it is this aspect of Mayavad philosophy which tries to diminish the importance of the Lord. That is the fundamental problem that all of us are trying to overcome. Immediately when you diminish the importance, the glory of the Lord, you have to substitute something else in its place. And therefore we substitute ourselves. And therefore we think there is no superior authority that we need to take guidance from, that we need to take orders from, that we need to take some kind of correction from. Immediately when you have a hierarchy, there is some system whereby those lower in the hierarchy, in terms of whatever the measurement is, it could be advancement, it could be knowledge, it could be wisdom, could be beauty, whatever it is, there's hierarchies in every category of life. Those at the bottom, the natural situation is to receive nourishment from those who are more advanced in that subject. When you remove this, all that happens is one sinks to the lowest platform, eventually. So constantly we need a guiding, superior connection to look forward to. The only way that devotees actually manage to survive in this material world, which is full of all kinds of tribulations, challenges, discouraging circumstances and discouraging events, is that they take great encouragement from the fact that these sufferings are temporary. They're only here for a short period of time. And in due course, my rightful place is the kingdom of God, where actual real spiritual exchanges take place, and real interaction and a real rasa is experienced, which allows everyone to exhibit their full potential. So because that is lacking in the Mayavad philosophy, individuals around the world, they imbibe some portion of that Mayavad philosophy, even though they won't directly claim to be Mayavadis as such, and they will act in so many highly dubious and highly questionable ways. So this is why this section where Lord Chaitanya is explaining this to Prakashananda Saraswati, it takes quite some time. And again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita later, in the Madhya Lila, this conversation is described in even more detail. So let's see some more points that Srila Prabhupada has made. I'm not sure we'll cover it all. Srila Vyasadeva has explained that the Absolute Truth is a person who has different potencies. Merely by his desire that there be creation and by his glance, sa aikshata, he created this material world, sa asrijata. After creation, he remains the same person. He is not transformed into everything. One should accept that the Lord has inconceivable energies and that it is by his order and will that varieties of manifestations have come into existence. In the Vedic literature, it is said, Satattvato nyatha buddhir vikara iti udarata. This mantra indicates that from one fact, another fact is generated. For example, a father is one fact, and a son generated from the father is a second fact. Thus, both of them are truths, although one is generated from the other. This generation of a second independent truth from the first truth is called vikara, or transformation resulting in a byproduct. The Supreme Brahman is the Absolute Truth, and the energies that have emanated from him and are existing separately, such as the living entities and the cosmic manifestation, are also truths. This is interesting. Here, the living entities and matter are described as energies emanating from the Lord. This is an example of transformation, which is called vikar or parinam. To give another example of vikar, milk is a truth, but the same milk may be transformed into yogurt. Thus, yogurt is a transformation of milk, although the ingredients of yogurt and milk are the same. So there are two aspects mentioned here. First of all, on the spiritual platform, when one spiritual entity produces another spiritual byproduct, transformation you can say, the initial spiritual entity, the Supreme Lord, is not altered. Om Purnamada, Purnamidam, etc. Right? The Supreme Complete Whole. In the Ishopanishad it's explained, the Supreme Lord, he will produce from himself innumerable functioning entities, and each of them can be complete and full in themselves. That does not diminish in any way the original source. Diparchireva hi dasantarama bhupeta, dipayate vivrita hetu samana dharma. In the Brahma Samhita it's also explained that the Supreme Lord can be compared to a candle, diparchir. So this candle, we know that the candle can light many other candles, but the initial candle is not diminished in any way. These are analogies to help us comprehend something which doesn't generally happen in this material world. If someone has £1,000,000 and they give 200,000 to someone else, the chances are they won't be left with £1,000,000. Practical day-to-day experience tells us that when you give something, or when you separate yourself off, or when you manifest your energies or divert them into a separate area, you're left with less. So this is what causes great confusion. Because the spiritual world operates on entirely different principles, one actually needs to fully appreciate the existence of a real, genuine spiritual world in order to actually make any progress. The Mayavadis really cannot go any further, because they're simply stuck at this point, that transformation cannot happen, the energies and the energetic are the same. This is strongly refuted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The energies, as explained here in this last example of milk and yogurt, they can behave in different ways. The Lord is the energetic, and his energies are products. And kshiram yatha didi vikara vishesha yogat sangat sanjayate nahitata pritagasti hetu yashambutam apitata samupaiti karyat govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. It's explained in the Brahma Samhita again, that just as milk is transformed into yogurt, so in a similar way, this manifestation of material energy is a transformation of the potency of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord has many energies. Parasya saktir vidadaiva shriyate. We hear this often. It's been quoted in the previous classes as well. The Lord has many, many shaktis. And he will select, transform, enact different shaktis in order to get certain tasks done. So this material manifestation is another transformation of his energy. And he, by his will, he arranges for it to behave in a completely different way. Because it behaves in a completely different way, it is a separated energy of the Lord. But it is nevertheless his energy, and it is under his control. Mama Maya Duratyaya. Right? Although it is extremely difficult to control, it is his energy. So for us as spiritual practitioners, if we are trying to get free from the material energy and we're trying to actually come in contact with the spiritual energy, our aim is to surrender to the supreme controller of all energies, which is Krishna. Only when that happens can we actually become free from all different misconceptions. In the Chandogya Upanishad, there is the following mantra, Aitad Atmyam Idam Sarvam. This mantra indicates without a doubt that the entire world is Brahman. The Absolute Truth has inconceivable energies, as confirmed in the Shvetasvara Upanishad, Parasya Shaktir Vididhai Vishurete, and the entire cosmic manifestation is evidence of these different energies of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is a fact, and therefore what is created by the Supreme Lord is also factual. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. It is therefore to be concluded that Shankaracharya, in order to present the Supreme Lord, the living entities and the material nature as indivisible and ignorant, tries to cover the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He maintains that the material cosmic manifestation is mithya or false, but this is a great blunder. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a fact, how can his creation be false? Even in ordinary dealings, one cannot think the material cosmic manifestation to be false. Therefore, Vaishnava philosophers say that the cosmic creation is not false but temporary. It is separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but since it is wonderfully created by the energy of the Lord, to say that it is false is blasphemous. Quite strong words. We will often also find within the scriptures, Bhagavatam, different places, that the material world is referred to as false. In the first verse of the opening verse of the Bhagavatam, it is unreal. This material world is described as this is unreal. But we have to understand in which sense it is meant that this is unreal. The scriptures themselves are written not just as some abstract sentences of truth, which are meant to sit there preserved in a library or on a bookshelf. Yes, of course, they are self-evident truths. And because they're the absolute truth, this is why we spend time to study them. But when it is explained that something is unreal, it means that for us to make any use of our spiritual life, it shouldn't become a reality for us. If we meditate too much on the material world as being real and the focus of our activities, it means a lot of our energy will go into the material world. So it is better to just have a conception in our mind the material world is not worth investing time into. It is unreal. It is a phantasmagoria. It is like the will-o'-the-wisp, Prabhupada describes. Something very, very intangible. It has some effect for a limited duration of time. And as we've heard here, in very much that effect is real. To say it is completely illusory, as the Mayavadis do, that is an offense, blasphemy, according to Prabhupada. So we have to tread a very fine line. We have to understand that the Lord has his energies. Our interest is not in the material energy, which is wound up as and when it suits the Lord. It is a temporary manifestation. The real, permanent, essential nature is the spiritual world, which is forever manifest, and is forever, and in which pastimes are forever taking place. That is the real, the truthful nature. So sometimes devotees have difficulties explaining that, and it's a subject for much confusion. It's a very popular philosophy, everything is unreal. If everything is unreal, again you've removed the need for you to think along any particular lines. If everything is unreal and you are free to do whatever you like, we can think whatever concepts we like. And we can convince ourselves that whatever path of spirituality I think is correct, That is the path that I should follow. This is a very common phenomenon. And people, of course, because of their free will, everyone in the world can choose what they believe. ultimately what someone believes doesn't matter at all, in an ultimate sense. It only matters in one area. Because generally people behave according to what they believe. According to their beliefs, according to their mindsets, they engage in a certain range of activities, perhaps a certain job, perhaps a certain lifestyle. They make decisions based on their mindsets, which they themselves are not even able to describe. So in that sense, belief, one's faith, one's inherent ideas of reality, they are useful. They are a part of our sojourn in this world, but ultimately they don't matter. Because whether one person believes this and whether another person believes this, ultimately makes no difference. As Prabhupada explains, if a child puts his finger in the fire, whether the child thinks the fire is hot or not, he's going to get burnt. So the reality is that if we conduct ourselves in a certain way within this material world, certain results will happen. One could pretend that one is above them, but that's not the case. Every so often something amusing happens, that you have an incarnation of God walking around, and he has a toothache, as Maharaj mentioned yesterday. He has a toothache, or his leg is hurting, or he needs to go to hospital to have his appendix removed, or something needs to happen to the God who's walking around. So that person is clearly in a conception that he is something great. But reality doesn't care for what he thinks. Reality is going to act, and he's going to have bodily problems, whatever the situation. Of course, the danger is that when people in different levels of illusion, and perhaps if they are empowered with different shaktis, they can also convince others who are somewhat naive. That is where the real danger comes. I'm sure all of you will have heard that around the world there are many people claiming to be Jesus Christ, claiming to be the Messiah. I mean, if we go back a few decades, there's a whole fan club, Elvis is Alive. And people come up with all sorts of concoctions. But reality doesn't change because of a person's conception. You can carry on imagining that Elvis is alive. You can carry on thinking that you're Jesus. It won't change anything. All that happens is that our human life gets wasted bit by bit. And the actions of the sun, rising and setting, is described. Ayur harati vaipum sam, udyan ashtam chayan aso. Tasyarte yat kshano nita uttama shloka varteya. The rising and the setting of the sun acts upon every single person, except for the one who engages his life, his time, in discussing the glories, the katha of the all-powerful Lord. For such a person, the effects of time are entirely different. Time is generally feared. The rising and setting of the sun is a very fearful concept for people, because it signifies, I am one day closer to death. And it's not something people like to really meditate on too much. It's an indicator. So, focusing on the absolute truth is our goal. It is the goal of the Bhagavatam. It is the goal of all the literatures that Prabhupada has translated. I'll speak for maybe 5 more minutes, then we can have some questions. So Prabhupada goes on to say, Sripad Shankaracharya has tried to mislead the readers of the Vedanta Sutra by misinterpreting the words Anandamayo Vyasat, and he has even tried to find fault with Vyasadeva. All the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra need not be examined here. However, since we intend to present the Vedanta Sutra in a separate volume. So I thought this was interesting, that it was part of Prabhupada's plan that the Vedanta Sutra should be presented, but from a proper viewpoint. Vedanta Sutra, as we've discussed, is something which is so intense, so complex, that it is very difficult for even a great scholar to pick it up and actually understand what is meant by this. But Mahaprabhu explains that the Vedanta Sutra is actually pure. It contains actually a real clear understanding of God. But it is very, very difficult to comprehend. So in that sense, the Vedanta Sutra is not the natural scripture that is recommended for us to refer to. We have a concrete example of this. Now here it is said that Shankaracharya found fault with Vyasadeva. But also we know someone else who found fault with Vyasadeva. Who was that? Narad Muni. And in what sense did Narad Muni find fault with Vyasadev? He, for not glorifying the Lord, and for giving extra impetus to the impersonal aspect of the Lord, and
satisfying the senses.
He promoted through his different compositions, the Vedanta Sutra, the Mahabharata, the different itihasas, etc. He promoted that dharma, artha, karma, moksha. These are methods by which one should progress in this life. Demigod worship, focus on sense gratification, karma kand. These concepts were very much strongly explained within his compositions. And in the Vedanta Sutra you will also find hints at this. Now these are presented because yes, whole systems are there for those who are materially minded to gain some advancement, some elevation. But mixed up within that, there is devotional service to the Lord. And Vyasadeva was criticized because he had not fully brought this out. And therefore people had become confused. When you equally present the path of sense gratification and the path of renunciation, and you don't very clearly distinguish, as it's done in the Gita, which is which, and which is the superior path, then people will naturally become confused. And different groups will seek different aspects of those philosophies. So that was the status before Bhagavatam was composed. So Narad Muni enticed Srila Vyasadeva and said to him, "You are the Supreme Personality Himself. You know exactly what is what. By meditation you can fully see who Krishna is, who the Supreme Lord is. And this dissatisfaction that you are feeling is because you may not have glorified the pastimes, the qualities and the activities of the Supreme Lord." People in this world are very much engaged in activities based on some subtle Mayavad philosophy of enjoying. And these activities are very much the cause of their distress. Unless you provide them some other course of activities, whatever philosophy you give them, they will simply be distracted. So therefore, by meditating on the glories, name, fame, form, qualities and pastimes of the Lord, in a very real and practical sense, one can actually become free from our misconceptions. It's described as this is the only way for one to achieve great success in this day and age. In Kali Yuga, the Bhagavatam arises above all other scriptures. The Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam together form the basis of recommended scriptures. Prabhupada wanted to translate the Vedanta Sutra, but his priority was the Bhagavatam. So he gave us the Bhagavad Gita, he gave us the Bhagavatam, he gave us the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahaprabhu very clearly states that the words in the Vedanta Sutra cannot be understood by the impersonalists or the Mayavadis, because if and until they do not take direction from a devotee, it will simply cause confusion and lack of understanding. That is the consequence of hearing Vedanta Sutra as said by the composer of Vedanta Sutra, the Supreme Lord Himself. So he's recommending us not to delve too much into it. But we have to know enough, and in Prabhupada's purports, he quotes different aphorisms. Throughout his purports, he's constantly quoting different ones. We have to know enough to first of all be sure in ourselves that this is actually the same philosophy. And we also have to know enough so that when others challenge us that you are referring to literatures which have been composed later, we will actually know what to say. This is a very common criticism. But for us, there's no criticism. The natural author of Vedanta Sutra has now composed the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Who better to write a commentary? So therefore, in that sense, although we have two commentaries, the Govinda Bhashya is not given as much prominence amongst Gaudiya Vaishnavas. For that reason, that we have the Parampurana, Purana Mamalam, Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. This is the topmost Purana, the highest glorification of the Lord. And that itself is sufficient for us to go back to Godhead. So that's a little discussion on impersonalism. I was going to speak on the impersonal feature of the Lord, but I think we won't have time. But maybe if there are any questions or comments...